whole works, doesn't it? Quite nicely. Another saying that uses this term key or function, working, dynamic activity is the poem Hunger's poem in the first case of the Book of Serenity. The unique breeze of reality, do you see? Continuously, the mother principle. Runs her loom and shuttle. So loom here is key. And so this verse is celebrating this kind of Zen meaning of functioning activity, inconceivable functioning of the universe, but also means loom. And I think that fits nicely into this poetic image. The unique breeze of reality, do you see? Continuously, the mother principle, another name for Mother Earth, Big Mother Earth, Mother Universe, the mother principle runs her loom and shuttle, or her working activity with the shuttle, weaving the ancient brocade, incorporating the forms of spring. It's a nice Zen key poem. It's not the full term Zen key, but it's this key. The whole works is like that. The mother principle of reality, the principle of reality runs her loom and shuttle, weaving the ancient brocade of the whole works, incorporating the forms of spring. The flowers just starting to bud on the trees, the green grass growing taller in the spring rain is the manifestation of the whole works. Then we have Yuan Wu's poem quoted here in the second half of this Dogen essay. We've already heard this, but here he says, Zen master Engo Kokugon, or in Chinese, Yuan Wu, Qijin said, life is the manifestation of the whole works. Death is the manifestation of the whole works. This translation says, in life the whole works appears, in death the whole works appears. It could be translated like that. One should thoroughly investigate and understand this saying. This is another one of Dogen's favorite terms, Japanese. Sankyu means thoroughly investigate. So I think it's wonderful that we might think, well, Zen is just about like just letting go of all your thinking. Just try not to think anything at all. Sometimes Zen gets that kind of reputation. But here's our great Zen founder saying, bringing up a saying and then saying, thoroughly investigate this. While we're listening to it, while we're listening to Dogen talk, or while we're reading his words, and during, what about during Zazen? It's not, It's not clear whether he meant to investigate this during Zazen. Occasionally, Dogen says, right at the time of your sitting, thoroughly investigate whether the world is vertical or horizontal, whether the mind and body is dropping off, or whether dropping off is mind and body, and such matters. As long as it doesn't become too conceptual and theoretical in Zazen, we can investigate the present experience. And if we're talking about the whole works, we can investigate experientially during Zazen. Is that sound of the bird and the sound of the air conditioner equally manifestations of the whole works? Is the feeling in the stomach and the feeling in the shoulders equally manifestations of the whole works? Is this thought and that thought also manifestations of the whole works? Then how is Zazen at such a time? So this is the pivotal statement that's the source of this essay. Life is the manifestation of the whole works. Death is the manifestation of the whole works. Thoroughly investigate and understand this saying. What thorough investigation means is that the principle of life is the manifestation of the whole works has nothing to do with beginning and end. Though it is the whole earth and all space, not only does it not block or impede life as the manifestation of the whole works, it doesn't impede death as the manifestation of the whole works. Thorough investigation is the principle that life is the manifestation of the whole works. Has nothing to do with beginning and end. Each expression of Dogen has so much in there. It's so potent. It's so loaded with potential for investigation. Thorough investigation is the principle that life is the manifestation of the whole works. It has nothing to do with beginning or end. Beginnings and endings. It doesn't have to do with, my life began at this certain time, my death is going to end at this certain time. I would say it's only about right now. It's always about right now. Not some other beginning or ending. Always now. That the life is the manifestation, this particular life right now, as the manifestation of the whole works, is about this one right now. And that's what thorough investigation is about. And though it is, we might say, the whole works is the whole earth and all of space, it doesn't impede the appearance, or it doesn't impede the manifestation of the whole works as life. The whole works, we might say, the whole works fills all of space. The whole works has no edges. The whole works has no beginnings and ends. And it doesn't impede life, this particular life, as the manifestation of the whole works. In other words, the whole boundlessness of the whole works doesn't impede any particular manifestation. It seems to me, Dogen's saying, the boundless totality doesn't block or impede each particularity from manifesting. And how do we know that that this is so? This present expression, this present life, this present moment with all its unique particularity, each of our individual thoughts and feelings and unique experiences right now must be manifestations of the whole works. Where else could they be coming from? And therefore, each of our thoughts right now is living proof and verification that the whole works does not impede these very thoughts. Every experience we ever have, however painful our experience might be, is living proof that the whole works is allowed to express itself as this particular painful experience or pleasant experience. Every particular manifestation that has ever happened and is happening and will ever happen is allowed to happen. And the fact that it's happening is the proof that it's allowed to happen. If it wasn't allowed to happen, it wouldn't be happening. The whole work is very gracious that it allows all of this. So gracious that it allows painful experiences as well as pleasant. That's how free it is to allow everything. And in other words, to say allow everything is not to block anything or impede any particular manifestation. Though it is, reality is, the entire earth, all of space, it doesn't block or impede life, this particular life, as the manifestation of the whole works. And not only does it not impede life as the manifestation, it doesn't impede death as the manifestation either, Dogen says. When the whole works appears in death, though it is the whole earth and all of space, not only does it not block the appearance of the whole works in death, not only does it block death as the manifestation of the whole works, it doesn't block or impede life as the manifestation of the whole works either. The same sentence in reverse. This is how Dogen writes. Each sentence, right, is worthy of thorough investigation. For this reason, life doesn't obstruct or impede death, and death doesn't impede life. So I'm thinking that in the Huayan teachings, the Huayan means flower ornament, the Avatamsaka Sutra, the flower ornament sutra, is this basis for this Chinese Buddhist school that describes the intricate interpenetration of vastness and particulars and of each particular and so on. So this Buddhist tradition that had a great influence on Zen and Dogen, and in fact in Thomas Cleary's introduction to this essay, he frames it all as this is Dogen's understanding of this Huayan, this flower ornament kind of view of reality. That's how Thomas Cleary sees it. And this Huayan teaching emphasizes that the ultimate truth of unchanging suchness, emptiness, and the manifestation of each particular expression do not impede each other. The ultimate truth and the relative truth don't impede each other. They're non-impeding of the ultimate emptiness and the relative appearances. They don't impede each other. And but not only that, each particular within the relative world of appearances also do not impede each other. That's part of this Huayan teaching. In other words, like the floor is not impeding our bodies and vice versa. And the sound of the voice is not impeding the ear faculty and so on. All the particular phenomena are functioning harmoniously and working very nicely together without blocking or impeding each other. Everything is perfectly in its place without any resistance. Something like this is this part of the teaching of this school. And I kind of hear that in this section where Dogen is saying, the whole works, like the totality of the ultimate, doesn't block or impede each manifestation of the whole works. And like the manifestation of a particular life and a particular death. But also, this particular life doesn't impede a particular death, and the death doesn't impede a particular life. That would be like the phenomena and phenomena not impeding each other. In Japanese, I think it's jiji muge. Phenomena don't impede each other, and Ri-ji, or Ji-ri, the principle and the phenomena also don't impede each other. In other words, when death comes, death is not encroaching on, impeding on, and obstructing life. We might sometimes think that it does. Why is the death coming in and like blocking out life and destroying life and resisting life? But from this kind of understanding, it's not. It's not. It's just a complete manifestation of the whole works called death. Nothing's being obstructed or impeded. The whole earth and all of space are in life and in death too. However, it is not fulfilling the potential of one whole earth and one whole space in life and fulfilling their potential in death too. Though they are not one, they are not different. Though they're not different, they're not identical. We're talking about life and death here. Though they're not identical, they're not multiple. Therefore, in life, there are myriad phenomena of the appearance or manifestation of the whole works, and in death, too, there are myriad phenomena of the manifestation of the whole works. There's also the manifestation of the whole works in what is neither life nor death. So a lot's going on here. I hear this section of Dogen saying, life is the expression and manifestation of the whole works, and within this life, it's not just one thing, one chunk of thing called life. Obviously it's not, right? Like, my life is filled with intricate, infinite phenomena that are all also not impeding each other. In this one manifestation called life, there's infinite, you could say, sub-manifestations. And in death, there's also infinite sub-manifestations. There are myriad phenomena of the manifestation of life as the whole works, and myriad phenomena in the manifestation of death as the whole works. And there's also the manifestation of the whole works in what is neither life nor death. What would there be if it's neither life nor death? It's outside of our conceptions, like, this is alive, right now we're alive, and at the moment when the breath stops, that's death. That's being very black and white and making these distinctions. But what about that which is neither alive nor dead? That which Yan Yuan was asking about when he knocked on the coffin and said, alive or dead? And Dao Wu said, I won't say alive and I won't say dead. That which is neither alive nor dead, which doesn't fit into these conceptual categories. Conceptual, really very basic, maybe some of the most basic conceptual categories we have is life, this is alive, and death, this is death. The very fundamental conceptual categories. But is there manifestation of the whole works in what is neither life nor death? In other words, an inconceivable manifestation of the whole works. In the manifestation of the whole works, there is life and there is death. Therefore, the whole works of life and death must be like a person bending and straightening his arm. Which is seems to be this expression in the old sutras. I've seen this like in the Pali sutras, like to talk about speed, quickness of something. Like they say, Brahma was looking at Buddha just after his awakening under the Bodhi tree, and the Deva, the celestial being Brahma, appeared there right before him. He appeared faster from the farthest reaches of the universe, appeared in front of Buddha quicker than the time it takes for a person to bend and stretch out his arm. Maybe it was just one of those old Indian expressions that for quickness. How quick is that? So I think that Dogen is just, it's just one of those old sutra expressions that Dogen throws in here about suddenly anything can appear. But it also might be here we're talking about the whole works of life and death must be like a person bending and straightening his arm. It's like these two sides, there's these two sides. Life and death is kind of like bending and straightening. And we just heard that life doesn't hinder or impede death, and death doesn't impede life. Just as like bending the arm doesn't impede the straightening of the arm, and vice versa. The straightening arm of the arm doesn't hinder the bending of the arm, in the, like the way that birth or life does not hinder death. Or like it was turning the hand like that, you could say. In his whole works, hand turning. Turning the hand this way doesn't impede turning the hand this way. It's almost the same image as bending and stretching the arm. But it's one of those ones that kind of stops you in this kind of philosophical talk about birth and death. We have this straightforward image. And then the next sentence, for some reason, Thomas Cleary didn't understand what I would say is a very important sentence, maybe possibly the most important sentence of the entire essay. He just skipped it. What's up with that? Maybe he was either translating it really quickly. I mean, he puts a lot of, it's a kind of a strange image, but he puts a lot of strange images, so it's a mystery to me. I think all the other translations include the next sentence, which is, or it's like someone at night reaching back for a pillow. Some of you may know this refers to a story, a Zen koan story about compassion. That's why I think it might be the most important sentence. It's where, how compassion fits into the story of the whole works. So the story is Yunyan asked Dao Wu, which is kind of nice that Dao Wu is the same one who's going on the condolence call, right? His student asked Dao Wu, alive or dead, right? Now there's another student of Dao Wu named Yun Yan. I think they're both students of Yao Shan, who's one of our Soto Zen ancestors, Yakusan Igen Daiyosho. Ungan Donjo Daiyosho is Yun Yan, who I think later would become one of our ancestors. We wouldn't be here today without him. And he asked Dao Wu, what does the Bodhisattva of great compassion do with so many hands and eyes? So sometimes Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of great compassion, is depicted with 1,000 arms and 1,000 hands at the end of those arms. And on each of the palms of each of the hands, there's an eye, an eyeball. So they're like seeing hands. So what a beautiful image of the 1,000-armed Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva of great compassion, that you can see the paintings and the statues. Statues take a long time to carve, 1,000 arms, but there are many of them. The image, right, is the unity of wisdom and compassion. The hands are the helping hands of compassion. And some of the statues and paintings, maybe not each of the 1,000, but like maybe a couple hundred of the hands have different implements, different kind of tools, hammers and saws and screwdrivers and, Zoom stations and vaccines and medicines and food and water and all these beneficial ways to help beings that helping hands can do. But then how to help? How should we help? That's why each hand has a seeing eye in the hand. Have you seen these images? It's a great depiction of the Bodhisattva of great compassion. The hands and eyes work together. Right? You see how to respond and you respond. So, based on that image, in old Tang Dynasty, 9th century China, Yunyan asks Dao Wu, what does the Bodhisattva, or how does the Bodhisattva of great compassion use all those hands and eyes? Is it, you know, a kind of poetic way of asking, how does great compassion actually function in our lives? How does wisdom and compassion function together? Dao Wu said, it's like reaching back for a pillow at night. Kind of unexpected answer. With all these hands and eyes, how do they function? It's like kind of groping around in the dark for the pillow. Uncomfortable in our sleep, half asleep, mostly asleep. This is how the Bodhisattva of great compassion is. In the dark night, half asleep, there's some discomfort happening, and without thinking really at all, this is very intuitive thing of like, yeah, it's uncomfortable. Find some pillow and prop up the uncomfortable head and relieve the suffering. This is the Zen explanation of great compassion. Very intuitive, very unelaborate, not all worked up in a lot of conceptual ideas, just appropriate response to discomfort. I'd say, but that's just one's own discomfort. Well, maybe no separation between self and other at this point in the dark night. It's just there's some discomfort and there's finding the relief very intuitively and falling into a comfortable sleep. So that itself would be a great story even left there, I think, but the story goes on. Dao says, it's like someone reaching back for a pillow at night. And Yunyan says, oh, I understand what you mean. And Dao says, what do you understand? And Yunyan said, all over the body is hands and eyes, covering the whole body is hands and eyes, the whole Dharma body, all over it is hands and eyes. Not just at the end of each arm, but all over the whole surface of the body is hands and eyes. And Dao Wu said, oh, that's pretty good, but it's only 80% right. And Yunyan said, well, how would you say it? Dao Wu said, the whole body is hands and eyes. Or pervading, permeating the whole body, hands and eyes. There is nothing but hands and eyes. They're not just something stuck on the surface. The Bodhisattva of great compassion is nothing but wisdom and compassion, hands and eyes. So that's the classic Zen story that about great compassion, how it functions. So here it's being referenced. Not only is it being referenced here, but is this coincidence or is this the way the whole works? But you know, the whole Zenki, the whole works, is not this phrase that's like used all over the place. It pops up here and there, but it happens to pop up in the Book of Serenity, is this collection of Zen stories. And in this story on Yunyan's great compassion, the story about the hands and eyes, the verse by Hung Jir celebrating that koan story is, it's a longer verse, but the key lines in this verse celebrating the story I just told is, the present hands and eyes reveal the whole works. Zenki. So this phrase Zenki is in this verse. The present hands and eyes of the Bodhisattva of great compassion. In fact, I didn't even look at the reveal. It might even be manifest. Might even be Zenki Gen, are the manifestation of the whole works. One translation says, reveal the whole works. The great function works in all ways. What is taboo? In other words, how can you say anything is taboo, or that great compassion can't function as, things that seem like not compassion? Could great compassion function as a fisherman or a prostitute or a hunter or I don't know, these things that are very kind of taboo? I think we can find Zen stories that talk about great compassion functioning in these unexpected ways. So that the end of Hung Jir's verse on this, all over the body is hands and eyes, the body is hands and eyes, reaching back for a pillow at night story. Hung Jir says, the present hands and eyes are the manifestation of the whole works, or they reveal the whole works. The great function works in all ways. What could be taboo? So Hung Jir relates this whole body of hands and eyes to the whole works by saying, that is the whole works. The whole works is hands and eyes of great compassion. And then here Dogen's now talking about in the manifestation of the whole works, there is life and death. Therefore, the whole works of life and death must be like a person bending and straightening his arm, or like someone reaching back for a pillow at night. The whole works of life and the whole works of death is like this activity of great compassion, reaching back for a pillow at night. True compassion in the Zen tradition is the activity that intuitively comes forth from the accord with the whole works. Uncontrived, natural responsiveness to the need of the particular situation. So I think that's very wonderful. As we near the end of this essay, this whole works is a liberating teaching, but it's also the teaching of how true great compassion actually functions. In this very natural way. We could even say the whole works is naturally compassionate. The whole works is benevolent. It might not always look that way, but what true compassion is could be said to be the response based on non-separation. When we're contracted into the feeling and belief of a separate self, compassion is diminished. We can't respond. We don't notice the other's suffering because we're too caught in our own. But the more we open into the being the manifestation of the whole works, we can hear the cries of the world better, and we can see the cries of the world, and we can respond to the cries of the world. Herein, Dogen says, there are so many spiritual powers and light manifest, or herein, or the manifestation of the whole works, is manifested by means of spiritual powers and radiant light, which Dogen has another Shobo Gendo essay called Jinzu, or spiritual powers. I think the conclusion in that essay is there are all these kind of mystical, magical powers, especially in Indian Buddhism, super mundane powers, like seeing through walls and hearing the voices down the street and reading other people's minds. Indian Buddhism talks about all those kind of, you could say, side effects of a lot of zazen. And but Dogen and the Zen tradition say that the most miraculous power is like chopping wood and carrying water. Like our everyday activity is the mystical powers of the Buddha. And Dogen has another essay called Komyo, Radiant Light, and which is another name for the whole works. Radiant light. So here, the whole works of life and death is like a person bending and straightening his arm, or like someone at night reaching back for a pillow. And it is manifested by means of these miraculous powers and radiant light. Maybe we could also hear it as the miraculous powers is like the functioning, the key side, and the radiant light is like the totality, Zen side of Zen and key. At the moment of manifestation, because it is completely activated by manifestation, one sees and understands that there is no manifestation before the present manifestation. This is the realm of the unchanging now, eternal now. There's no previous manifestation followed by another manifestation. There is just the present manifestation, and there has always only just been the present manifestation. This one. Each unique, but no past or future. Dogen says elsewhere, it's like a hammer striking emptiness. Before and after, its exquisite peal permeates everywhere. And there's this one hammer strike of emptiness pervades all of the past and future simultaneously, right now. One sees and understands that there is no manifestation before the present manifestation. However, prior to this manifestation is previous manifestation of the whole works. It's like that. Also, although there is previous manifestation of the whole works, it does not impede the present manifestation of the whole works. For this reason, such a vision and understanding vigorously appears. The past manifestation of the whole works doesn't impede, again, doesn't impede or block the present one. The present one doesn't impede the past one. This thorough investigation of how nothing impedes anything else throughout space, and nothing impedes anything else throughout time, and the relative and ultimate don't impede each other, is a very, it reveals a very open universe. We often feel like a lot of things are impeding or obstructing and blocking other things. This is the realm of non-blockage. Even with the appearance of blockage and impeding, from a deeper perspective, nothing can impede anything. And for this reason, such a vision and understanding vigorously appears. It appears brightly and shockingly. It appears like an 8-month-old going, whoa! When they see a hand that's neither their hand nor an other's hand. And this was taught to the assembly at the residence of the former governor of Itsumo province next to Roku Haramitsu Temple on the 17th day, 12th month, 3rd year of Ninji in 1242. And and then Okamura Roshi's commentary, he has access to all these Japanese translations, so and he said that his Dharma grandfather Kodo Sawaki Roshi, he would regularly give talks about the Shobogenzo, and he would always read a summary poem about the Shobogenzo essay by Menzan Zenji, who lived in the 1700s, an important Soto Zen ancestor, also a Shobogenzo fan. So here's Menzan's poem in his extensive record. It's kind of summarizing this essay, Shobogenzo Zenki, the whole works, in true Zen flavor, Menzan says. The whole works is no works. No works is the whole works. Beyond the six sense faculties, there is no self. Consummately, in the 10 directions, there is no other. Peaceful sitting of all Buddhas in the 3 times, the intimate room of the successive generations of ancestors, hiding or appearing for the time being, movement and stillness are non-dual. This is the life vein of true patch-robed disciples. Sometimes that's how the whole works manifests, like today. On another day, it may manifest in a different way. But today's manifestation of the whole works doesn't impede another day's manifestation of the whole works. And the we're being offered the opportunity to open to the possibility that if we want to benefit beings, if we want to respond with compassion to the world of suffering, to open to the this teaching of the whole works, and then like we're a person riding in a boat, and trust that our actions and our intentions to help are helping making the boat what it is, and the boat's giving us a ride at the same time. Others' suffering is invoking our response, and our response is responding to other suffering in this very natural and ungraspable way, like a person reaching back for a pillow at night. Any questions or comments?
We have a microphone. I think Cody.
I was thinking of your example earlier about how there's both the kind of like a passive and active component to being in the boat taking you along, and then you kind of trying to navigate at the same time, or at least thinking you're navigating, and kind of drawing an analogy to compassion insofar that there's whatever, like you were saying, whatever appears by virtue of it appearing is already accepted and embraced, and yet that doesn't keep one from actively taking a role in trying to be helpful when the situation arises.
Yeah, it can be a natural response.
Natural.
And like you said, it's seemingly controlled, did you say? And we're not really controlling the boat, even though we feel like we are, or we're trying to sometimes. But it's participatory. Somehow, control seems different than participatory. This life is a participatory opportunity, and most life is requesting our participation in it without controlling it. It's quite hard, because when we start, the more we're participating, the more we start veering towards trying to control. And then if we're trying to respond compassionately, then control tends to hinder that.
Like if we think we're the one that's actually acting compassionately.
Yeah, if we think we're the one, not as a manifestation of the whole works, but I, as a separate individual, with my own inherently powerful free will, I'm able to step forward and fix it. Then sometimes it might work out okay, but often we get into trouble. Somehow, we're just responding. In this dark night kind of way, like there's some discomfort, and what's the intuitive response? Especially, it also is based on this trusting more and more that the whole works is compassion itself. I could say it's compassionate, but it's more like it is the open responsiveness based on the reality of non-separation. The whole works is like that already. Or the traditional teaching is that great compassion is a natural quality of Buddha nature without any like extra effort required. There may be effort needed to kind of peel back the obscurations to the great compassion, but the great compassion is already there.
And it's like the example that you were giving of, you know, looking down and noticing that it's steering itself. It's like if there's somebody in trouble in the water and you think you're the one like navigating it over, but then you look down and it's been doing it by itself.
Yeah. Or how exactly does that happen? That, yeah, you see the person drowning in the water next to the boat and the hand moves to steer the boat towards that person. Did I do that? Or was it just a manifestation of the whole works? The boat's giving me the life, but also I'm making the boat what it is. Or I'm participating in the activity of the boat. Yeah, very mysterious. A little bit like how does that hand move? Maybe think of that image of like Zen and the art of archery, right? Like pulling the bow back until the instruction for this kudo ceremony of shooting the arrow is like, don't decide when to release it, as I recall. You hold it until it releases on its own, and it took this personal, this student of kudo a long time to discover how to not decide when to let go of the bow, when to let the arrow fly, and when there's no free will involved there, then the proposition is that you hit the target, or the target is hit without any effort. But very hard not to make some effort. It's a similar image, actually. It's not controlling, but it's totally participating. and it's hard to fathom how that works. The releasing of the bow, the releasing of the arrow at the perfect time is a manifestation of the whole works. Like reaching back for a pillow at night.
Well, in the same vein, the words I like from this are does not impede.
Yes.
I really like those words. And I take those in as, a real point of practice. And it seems to me that in Zazen, just don't impede.
Yes.
Does not impede. And then in personal relationships, don't impede, And this is, in my experience, it takes a lot of effort or concentration to not impede others and not impede yourself.
We could also, taking it one step even further back, it's rather than trying not to impede, it's more like intimately seeing how there isn't impedance. Especially like in Zazen, maybe easier to see. In human relations, these things are hard. But in Zazen, particularly, we often probably feel that thoughts are impeding our space of our Zazen. I'm just trying to be settled and still and open and quiet here, but these thoughts keep impinging, impeding and obstructing the settledness of my Zazen. And then this teaching is, without stopping the thoughts from impeding, seeing how the thoughts actually truly don't impede the zazen. It's a very subtle point. And we could say the reason that they don't impede the zazen is the whole works, and the thoughts are manifestations of the whole works. And how could a manifestation of the whole works impede the whole works? How could a cloud that's made out of sky impede the sky?
Well, that's why the fellow says something like, "Nothing is taboo."
And nothing is taboo. Right. Yeah, and yeah.
That struck me as well.
Yeah, right. This thought in zazen, I don't mind other thoughts arising, but this thought is like an evil thought. This is like a totally taboo thought. I feel so bad about this very thought. Well, is it a manifestation of the whole works? And then it kind of diffuses the impedance of that thought. Yeah, a lot about like looking deeply into the thought. And I think in human relations, we impede each other. If we remember that teaching that somebody's view is impeding my view, I feel like, and maybe then and there's implications that their actions will impede on my actions. So harder, I think, in zazen, but this very spacious understanding of the whole works, yeah, where we're not actually impeding each other from a deeper perspective.
I think my response is just be mindful of apparent impedance.
Yes, be mindful of apparent impedance. That's the practice, yeah.
I think Clem. Oh, was it you?
I don't want to impede on his.
While you were giving your talk about the function of compassion, how it's reaching back for a pillow in the dark, it occurred to me that many people in this world would view that compassion is the hand of a personal God intervening in your life, but yet we look at it as functioning unconsciously. And I just find this very curious in how we could reach these different conclusions.
Could we? Would it be taboo to say that that another translation of Zenki besides the whole works would be God?
It is a widely held belief.
I don't know if it's taboo or not. The grace of God is therefore the manifestation of the whole works.
Yeah, it occurs to me too that, like, for example, in Paradise Lost, there was a great rejection of a portion of the whole works, setting up conflict.
Yeah, it's easy to grasp and reject portions of the whole works. Yeah, yeah. So these teachings of zazen is, I think, very good for, you could even say that's what zazen is basically releasing this grasping and rejecting of the whole works, of pieces of the whole, of particular manifestations of the whole works. And that these kinds of teachings can help us to release that grasping by seeing, by thoroughly investigating how the manifestations of the whole works are themselves the whole works. I think that's what a lot of the Dogen is saying here. What time is this scheduled to?
3:40.
Oh, okay.
I think Larry Son had a question.
No,
please.
So, that brings me exactly where you ended was my question, which is, I think you said something about it's an instruction to open up to the non-impeding of, and my mind says, well, how do you open up? And when you mentioned thorough investigation, but within my limited practice, I can't imagine being able to open up to this teaching anywhere other than in sitting, in Zazen.
What about right now?
Yes, well, theoretically. I'm working on it.
Sometimes when we're talking about it, that very exercise that of our minds to just hear such words sometimes helps us. Sometimes I feel like I can open to it more sometimes when I'm hearing Dogen trying to manifest it through words, sometimes even more than in Zazen, where I'm actually just go back to some habitual thinking. Listening to this kind of Dogen talk, it keeps taking over our habitual thinking. It's so different from our habitual thinking.
Thanks for that additional teaching.
It doesn't necessarily impede our habitual thinking, but it kind of overlays it with the icing of hands and eyes, which can eventually seep down into the habitual thinking, so the habitual thinking itself can become hands and eyes. Hope that's all clear. Just loosening up our impedance. I think that's a lot of what Dogen's good for. We're trying to lay out Dogen's five steps of meditation method or something. Can't really do it so well. This life is a manifestation of the whole works, and may we open to our own and others' deaths as a beautiful manifestation of the whole works, and trust that this is the compassionate activity of Avalokiteshvara, and may our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit.